Chinese and Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine have completed a prisoner swap. Reuters' David Doyle has more.
In an industrial town near the front line of the Ukraine conflict, detainees from both sides began returning home on Sunday in an all-for-all prisoner swap agreed between President Volodymyr Zelensky and Russia's Vladimir Putin. That agreement has seen dozens exchanged from both sides and is likely to be hailed by Zelensky, who won a landslide election victory in April, as proof that he is making good on his promise to bring captured Ukrainians home. Kiev's forces have been battling separatists in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine since 2014, in a conflict that has claimed more than 13,000 lives. Sporadic fighting continues despite a ceasefire.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. A rocket attack on a southern Yemeni separatist militia graduation ceremony has left around 10 people dead and more than several dozen wounded. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Survivors helped victims of the rocket attack as rescue workers evacuated the wounded to ambulances, taking them to hospitals in the southern Yemeni capital of Aden. Witnesses say the rocket struck near a viewing stand at a military graduation ceremony for southern separatist militia cadets. Yemen southern separatists targeted in Sunday's attack have been fighting the Houthis alongside other forces loyal to President Hadi. The separatists, who are seeking independence from southern Yemen, clashed with other forces loyal to Hadi in Aden this past summer. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And from Washington, this is VOA News. A fresh Taliban attack in Afghanistan has killed 17 pro-government forces, even as the insurgent group is reported to be mulling over a brief ceasefire to try to seal a foreign troop withdrawal deal with the United States. The overnight deadly insurgent attack targeted a security outpost in northeastern Takhar province. New York authorities say five people were stabbed late Saturday night in Muncie, New York, at a rabbi's home during the celebration of the seventh night of Hanukkah. New York police say the assailant fled in a vehicle. Police Chief Brad Weedle says they caught the suspect after putting his license plate number into a plate reader called an LPR.
We're very fortunate that NYPD was all over this right away. And by putting that plate into the LPR system, we got hits as the vehicle went into the city. And we were fortunate to have an apprehension occur down in the 32nd precinct.
New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says he considers this an act of domestic terrorism.
This is an intolerant time in this country. We see anger, we see hatred exploding. It is an American cancer in the body politic.
This is the latest and most violent act in a string of anti-Semitic attacks in the greater New York City area in the last few days. North Korea is holding a key meeting ahead of a self-imposed year-end deadline for Washington to make concessions in nuclear negotiations. AP Shelley Adler reports.
The high-profile political conference comes as the U.S. and National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien still await what Kim Jong-un called a Christmas gift.
Chairman Un has said that there would be something over Christmas. I think the president has engaged in personal diplomacy at a very high level with him over the years, and they have a good relationship personally. Perhaps he's reconsidered that.
Some observers predict North Korea might use the conference to announce it would abandon faltering diplomacy with the U.S. and lift its moratorium on major weapons tests. O'Brien appeared on ABC's This Week. Shelley Antler, Washington.
The new year is just days away, and many will ring it in New York's Times Square. The area will be flooded with police on New Year's Eve, with the department saying it may just be the safest place on earth. AP's Julie Walker reports.
The NYPD says there are no credible threats, but police are taking no chances. Counterterrorism Chief Martin Matarazzo says anyone coming to Times Square will have to go through tight security.
You will encounter canine vapor dogs. You will encounter our heavy weapons teams. You will encounter multiple magnetometers, screening and wanding.
And that's just some of what you'll see, says Police Commissioner Dermot Shea.
This is going to be one of the most well-policed, well-protected celebrations in the entire world.
But he reminds people to stay vigilant.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We don't have any discussion with President Nguema. He came with his own. We haven't had discussion with him. Gyumsoro don't have discussion with him.
Then we don't know about what they discussed with President Alassane Ouattara.
A spokesperson for Ivory Coast opposition party Generations and People in Solidarity, or GPS, says accusations against Guillaume Soro are politically motivated.
I think it's our duty to share with other African countries and this is need for other continents, because we defend that peace and stability are fundamental for the well-being of the humankind.
The Angolan foreign minister addresses concerns about the way the country handled the repatriation of DRC refugees.
In 2017, International Monetary Fund published the 10 richest countries in Africa. None of the country was coming from a safe zone. And most of these countries had their own currency.
And debate on the future of the CFA franc in the Central African region intensifies. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A spokesperson for Ivory Coast Opposition Generations and People in Solidarity, or GPS, says accusations against Guillaume Soro, the former president of the Ivorian National Assembly, is politically motivated. Soro, a former rebel leader, is accused of an alleged coup plot that includes amassing weapons. Ivorian authorities issued an arrest warrant for Soro, prompting him to call off a planned homecoming after months overseas. GPS spokesperson Habib Sonogo tells me they will seek redress in African courts. They would also engage the international media about what he says is a plot to undermine opponents of the government in the run-up to the next general election.
In our opinion, Guillaume Soro is just the victim of a plot, simply. And our goal is just to share this information to everyone around the world.
So why do you think it is a plot? A plot by who? Who is plotting against him?
A plot because he declared that he will be a candidate for Ivorian election, simply. It is a reason. The reason is to put him out the election process. It is the only reason all these things appear, and I will explain to you.
All right, I'm listening to your explanation. Since you said this is politically motivated, tell me why you think the charges against him is politically motivated.
After 6 months, he decided to come back in Ivory Coast first, and the leaders of GPS in Ivory Coast informed the government, and they have 2 meetings with the security, with the head of the police in Abidjan. And after these 2 meetings, they decide that Guillaume Soro will come the 23rd. More than 800 gendarmerie and police officers came and forbid people who want to go to welcome to Guillaume Soro first. And after the airplane commander received information that he cannot go to land to Abidjan airport because of some security reason, then he explained him to Guillaume Soro, and he asked Guillaume Soro if he wants to land in Niger, in Niamey, or in Accra. Guillaume Soro decides to go to Accra, and he goes there, but Ivorian authority called Ghanaian authority. He talked to Abedi Pele, and Abedi Pele tried to talk to the government, but they explained to Abedi Pele that it is impossible because the Ivory Coast government asked to them to forbid Guillaume Soro go down to Accra. Then after, he came back from Europe.
What is Guillaume Soro going to do about the charges leveled against him by the Ivorian government?
Simply, actually, we will go to the media and we will explain the real version, because we don't trust again anymore in the justice of our country. Because when we see the scenario, it means that the government and the lawyer or the general attorney just plan to plot against him. The And now we will go first to the African of Justice Court. We will take the world and the African institution as the witness simply, and we will explain our version. But we are sure that at the end, he will become rehabilitated.
Will Guillaume Soro participate as a presidential candidate in next year's general election in Ivory Coast despite facing these charges?
He will, because Ivorians and all the world will be aware that he was in the plot, simply. All this operation has only one goal, as to prohibit Guillaume Soro to present himself to compete for the election. And what we want to do is just to talk to the media, is just to bring some people to see the embassy and the authority of all other countries and explain. But also, we are sure that Ivorian people also don't let the RSDP and the government rob the future election. Guillaume Soro will compete. We are sure.
Did Guillaume Soro ask the president of Equatorial Guinea, President Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbazogo, to speak with President Ouattara in Ivory Coast on his behalf?
We don't have any discussion with President Nguema. He came with his own. We haven't had discussion with Guillaume Soro. Don't have discussion with him. Then we don't know about what he discussed with President Alassane Ouattara.
Habib Sonogo is a spokesperson for Ivory Coast Opposition Party, Generations and People in Solidarity, or GPS. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location. In part two of the interview, the Angolan Foreign Minister Manuel Domingos Agosto addresses concerns about the way his administration handled the repatriation of DRC refugees. They had sought refuge in Angola following conflict in part of the DRC ahead of the recent elections. Foreign Minister Manuel Domingos Agosto also underscored the importance of the diplomatic relations between the administration in Luanda and Kinshasa. Talk to me about how Angola handled the DRC refugees. Some suggest that the government was too slow to react in the transportation of the refugees back to DRC. And what is the relationship between Luanda and Kinshasa?
The relationship between Luanda and Kinshasa, very good, for not to say excellent. As I say, as a result of the elections in DRC, there is a relatively political stability in DRC, and that helps. But the relations have been always good in the last time. We are working with DRC government and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and so far many refugees have went back, but some of them, they won't stay in Angola. And we are trying to integrate them with the productive activities. So there is no crisis anyway.
A lot of African-Americans or Africans in the diaspora are celebrating 400 years of slavery. Is the government in Angola celebrating this, and what policies or measures is the government implementing to celebrate this? Because in other countries, for example, in Ghana, they have the Year of Return, where you have a lot of people going and business opportunities, investment. What is Angola doing about this issue? Because Angolan slaves were here in the U.S. as well.
Not only Angolan slaves have been here, but the first African slaves were from Angola. That must be crystal clear. And that's why I'm here now, today. Based on the say that better late than never, we are here now to start our journey on recognizing the sacrifice of our ancestors. We are here this evening to celebrate these 400 years of the arrival of the first 20 African slaves, which happened to be Angolans, according to all the research done. And this tragic past must be inspirational for the new generations, but also to underline that Angola gave its contribution for this great country, which is the United States of America. And the decision of my government is that from this year, we will make regular, every year, a celebration on this journey of our ancestors to the Americas, not only to the United States of America, but all this area of the Americas, including the Caribbean countries.
Looking at the security issues on the continent, what role do you think Angola can play in terms of exporting its peace and stability that other African countries can learn from the Angolan experience to ensure peace and stability on the continent?
We think that the peace in Angola was not achieved only by the Angolans. We had help of many countries, namely our African countries. And Angola thinks that it's time to give back. We took it, but we must give back. And we're trying to do so. We are, for instance, now involved on trying to bring sister countries like Rwanda and Uganda together. I just came from another round of talks between delegations of two countries. So that's the way Angola wants to do it, and not claiming any price for it. I think it's our duty to share with other African countries, and if needs for another continent, because we defend that peace and stability are fundamental for the well-being of the humankind.
Manuel Domingos Augusto is the Angolan foreign minister. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Debate on the future of the CFA franc in the six-member Central African Economic and Monetary Community, or CEMAC, has intensified after eight West African countries agreed to change the name of their common currency to ECO. They also severed the CFA franc's links to former colonial ruler France. The CFA franc, used by West and Central African states, is considered by many as a sign of French interference in its former African colonies and the main reason for the underdevelopment of CEMAC, which remains the poorest economic bloc in Africa. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Last week's announcement by Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara in Abidjan, in the presence of the visiting French President Emmanuel Macron, that eight West African countries had agreed to change the name of their common currency to ECO has dominated media debates in Cameroon. Louis Nsonkeng, a researcher and economic lecturer at the University of Bamenda, Cameroon, says when the ECO becomes legal tender, the eight West African states will have their final freedom from the strong grip of former colonial master France. He says the six Central African states that also use the CFA franc should immediately emulate the example of the West Africans.
In 2017, International Monetary Fund published the 10 richest countries in Africa. None of the countries was coming from the CFA zone. And most of these countries had their own currency. If we discover that we don't have the resources to manage a common currency, then we should dissolve the currency area. We should dissolve it and each country should decide on their own currency.
Cameroon, Chad, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Central African Republic and Congo use the CFA franc. The CEMAC member states have more than 50% of their financial reserves kept in the French treasury following agreements signed in 1948. Thomas Babisakana, a Cameroon economist and financial expert, says such agreements drain the economies of Central African states because France now uses the euro, yet France still controls its currency.
Vous pouvez pas avoir l'indépendance et que l'instrument monétaire.
He says it is unthinkable that a country will claim it has its independence when its currency, which is an essential instrument for its economic policies, is controlled by a former colonial master. He says countries that still have the CFA franc as legal tender should immediately stop stocking their reserves in France and ask all French citizens who are working in the central banks of their former colonies following outdated conventions to leave. The CFA franc was created in 1945. It is considered by many as a sign of French interference in its former African colonies, even after the countries became independent. In 1999, the CFA franc's value was fixed at about 660 CFA francs to 1 euro. Daniel Onah-Ondo, president of the CEMAC Commission, says the six-member states' economic growth rate is estimated at 3% in 2019, up from barely 1% in 2018, and inflation remains under control at less than 3%. He says the most demanding issue is to consolidate regional integration before thinking of currency reforms.
President Idriss Déby Itno avait envoyé une commission de haut niveau.
He says Chadian President Idriss Déby, who has always insisted on the creation of an African currency, negotiated with his Central African peers. They sent a high-profile delegation to the International Monetary Fund to explain the importance of having a more independent and stronger regional financial bloc as a way of ensuring the economic stability of Central African states that use the CFA franc and fighting against poverty. He says after deep reflection, the issue of a single currency is under review, but is not urgent. The CFA franc was pegged to the French franc until 1999, when it then became tied to the euro. 14 West and Central African countries, divided into two monetary unions, ECOWAS and CEMAC, use the CFA franc. Critics have often said the regions, especially Central Africa, which is the poorest among the five African economic blocs, should stop using the CFA franc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Court of Appeal in Kigali has sentenced the former commander of Presidential Guard, Colonel Tom Byabagamba, and retired Brigadier General Frank Ruzagara to 15 years in prison. They were appealing sentences handed down by Rwanda's High Military Court in 2016. For VOA, Eugene Wimana has details from the courtroom in the Rwandan capital, Kigali.
The two senior officials were charged with spreading rumors to tarnish the image of Rwanda and the illegal possession of firearms. Colonel Tom Byabagamba, the former commander of Presidential Guard, also was charged with concealing evidence and undermining the national flag. He originally was sentenced to 21 years in prison. Retired Brigadier General Frank Rusagara had been sentenced to 20 years. After appealing, the sentence is 15 years and a demotion. For their lawyers, the road doesn't end here. Buhuru Pierre Celeste defends Rusagara.
We are not happy with this decision. The court has done what he has to do, and we have done our job, but we are not glad. We are not glad of this decision. So we shall talk. We shall talk with our client. And there is another way of making it up, because we have the Eastern African Court of Justice. We shall discuss with our client and see what we can do.
Under Rwanda's legal system, there is no next move in the court here. But lawyer Gakunzi Valerie, who represents Byabagamba, says the East African Court of Justice is another avenue toward justice.
Justice doesn't end here. Eh?
No. And have you talked with your client about that, about the next move?
I'm going to do that.
Eh?
I'm going to do that. I'm not bound to go everywhere where I think I can get justice, even though I'm denied here.
This case has drawn considerable attention in Rwanda and abroad. Some rights organizations have said the original trial was unfair and the charges were trumped up because of allegations they had supported the critics of President Paul Kagame. Recently, some members of the British Parliament have written to Kagame, urging him to release the officers. Kagame responded by saying others should not meddle in the case.
I don't understand the basis. I don't see the basis. Well, I'm not sure that they are aware of even how they complicate cases of those people they seem to be trying to speak for.
Kagame has led Rwanda's government since the end of the 1994 genocide by ethnic Hutus against the Tutsi minority and moderate Hutus. His government has remained popular because of its focus on economic growth and national unity. But human rights groups say Kagame has repressed dissidents. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
As a prolonged economic crisis forces more Zimbabweans into poverty, a civic organization is teaching some women how to make products such as detergent, soap and candles, helping them to earn incomes for their families. For VOA, Kusanai Muzenge brings us the following report from the Zimbabwean central city, Gweru.
There is a palpable sense of pride about Janet Chinokoro as she shows off the small bottles of petroleum jelly and bars of soap that she makes in one of her rooms at her home. The 29-year-old Chinokoro is a mother of three and lives in one of the crowded sections of the city of Gweru in Zimbabwe's central province, Midlands. She says she learned to make the products from the local branch of the Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe, WICOS, a year ago. The organization's primary focus is raising women's awareness of their rights under the country's constitution. She says it is from them that she got the idea that for a woman to be self-sufficient, she must engage in working with her own hands. She says that is when she was taught how to make soap, petroleum jelly, dishwashing liquid, and various kinds of soft drinks. Chinokoro makes a ton of soap per month and half a ton of petroleum jelly. She won't say how much money she makes from her products. She, however, is not hesitant to reveal that she used to fight a lot with her husband, who is a taxi driver, as their income was never enough. Now she is happy that they can provide for their family and even spare some money to support their parents who live in the rural areas. 30-year-old Molin Mtobga is one of the WICOS trainers teaching women how to make basic household products. The mother of one had to leave school and work as a housemaid to support her younger siblings after their parents had died. Mtobga learned how to make household products after joining a group that she came across via social media. Later, an acquaintance led her to WICOS. Through the money that she earns from conducting training programs, Mtobga has been able to expand the range of products she makes. She says her family hardly lacks for anything when it comes to basics. She's able to afford most of the things that they want through the work that she does. She also was able to register a company of her own so she can trade in a transparent, legal manner. Rachel Makiwa is in her late 50s and has been a member of WICOS for over 5 years. She, too, makes soap and petroleum jelly, but she also makes jewelry. She refers to herself as a late bloomer, but she was inspired to learn to make different products for her children. She says she started doing these things when she was this old. She did not start as a young person. Makiwa says she used to hesitate to take part in various initiatives that would be introduced, but then she realized it would be good to be able to leave something behind for her children when she dies. Alice Makata is the provincial chairperson for WICOS. She says the organization realized that just making women aware of their rights without equipping them with skills so they could take care of their families was not very helpful.
We've noted that as long as our women are financially dependent on men, we will never realize our vision of a society where women and girls can fully enjoy their rights. As such, we have initiated self-help projects like detergent making, washing powder, candle making, among others. We have testimonies from our members who have been trained that they are seeing positive fruits in their homes. As long as our women are financially independent, they are able to fully enjoy their rights.
Zimbabwe's economy has been in a steep decline with soaring inflation and severe shortages of everything from cash to medicines. The United Nations has warned that over 60% of the population is food insecure, and with high unemployment, many families have no disposable income. Many of the women who have taken part in the WICOS training programs say they now have a way to feed their families despite the nation's economic problems. Reporting for VOA from Gweru, this is Kudzanai Msengi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But first, the World Health Organization reports investigations into potential health threats and the quick response by WHO and partners to global emergencies has protected millions of the world's most vulnerable people this year from disease and death. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
In 2019, the World Health Organization and partners have responded to 51 emergencies in more than 40 countries and territories and have investigated 440 potential health threats in 138 countries and territories. After the headlines evoking these emergencies have faded away, the work of helping the victims of man-made and natural disasters recover carries on out of the media spotlight. Executive Director of WHO Emergencies Program, Michael Ryan, says the unseen work of sustaining fragile health systems in conflicts and other emergencies does not stop.
In Bangladesh, we work with partners to address the health needs of nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees living in the crowded camps in Cox Bazar. The mortality rate in this highly vulnerable population has remained at low levels. These crude death rates remain well below what is considered acceptable in this situation. And that's down to a lot of hard work by a lot of people.
Ryan says WHO and partners have provided health services to more than 10 million people in Yemen. He says over 1 million children have been protected from vaccine-preventable diseases and more than 100,000 have been treated for severe acute malnutrition.
In Uganda, Ebola transmission was prevented after cases crossed from DRC. On two separate occasions, and the preparedness work that's been going on in surrounding countries. Uganda, with the support of the international community, spent $18 million on preparedness and stopped Ebola twice.
The World Health Organization estimates more than $1 billion will be spent to root out the deadly Ebola virus, which has been circulating in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo since August 2018. The latest number of reported cases stands at 3,366, including 2,227 deaths. Other emergencies to which WHO has responded over the past year include the cyclone in Mozambique, conflict emergencies in Syria and South Sudan, floods in Iran, an earthquake in Albania, and a deadly measles outbreak on the small Pacific island of Samoa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In the African Champions League, holders Esperance of Tunisia were held to a goalless draw by AS Vita Club of the DR Congo on Friday as the third round of group games got underway. Esperance failed to score despite scoring six goals in the recently concluded FIFA Club World Cup. Esperance had won their previous two Group D matches, while Vita Club had lost twice. Esperance are chasing a record third consecutive Champions League title this season after victories over Al Ahly of Egypt and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco in the last two finals. Meanwhile, Raja Casablanca of Morocco closed the gap to 1 point in Group D with a 2-0 win over J.S. Kabylie of Algeria. Esperance now has 7 points, Raja 6, Kabylie 3, and Vita Club 1, halfway through the six-round group phase, with the top two finishers qualifying for the quarterfinals. TP Mazembe of DR Congo also surrendered a 100% group record this season after drawing 1-1 away to Primeiro de Agosto of Angola in Luanda. However, the Lubumbashi-based club remain top of Group A with 7 points, while Zamalek of Egypt has 3, Primero 2, and Zesco United of Zambia 1. Zesco host 5-time champion Zamalek on Saturday in Indola and need a win to retain a realistic chance of reaching the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, the Moroccan Football Federation last week suspended the referee Hicham Tiazi for life for what it called serious mistakes during a match in the Moroccan top flight. The official, who has been on FIFA's official referee list since 2010, awarded 4 penalties during a game between Olympique Karouba and Yosefik Rashid, including 3 for the home side. Olympique Karouba won the match 4-1, which was only their second win of the campaign so far. A statement by the federation said the decisions affected the outcome of the match. In athletics, former Valencia marathon champion Sami Kiprop Kitwara has been handed a 16-month ban by the IAAF over a doping violation. Kitwara got the ban after failing an in-competition doping control held in Seoul, South Korea, on March 17th. The long-distance runner tested positive for tabutaline. The federation says Kitwara has accepted the ban and will not appeal. The ban means that Kitwara's results since March 17th are now null and void. Finally, in boxing, the highly anticipated February 22nd rematch between heavyweight world title holder Deontay Wilder and linear champion Tyson Fury is now official. Top Rank and Premier Boxing Champions announced on Friday the fight will take place at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. American Wilder, with a record of 42 fights with 41 wins and 1 draw, fought England's Fury with a record of 29 fights with only 1 draw last December in Los Angeles. And that's about it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect a flashback with music from the continent. You're hearing from Harmonize with Atta Rudy. B2C featuring Rema will come your way with Gutuja, and then Amr Didiaba with Nyoleye, and then Chala Mwana ends with Karibu.
Atarudi, atawaletea zawadi. Atarudi, siwezi sema sikitu. nimefanya ukanikimbia. Nibema ungefanya maigizo, mara kumi usinge nizalia. Ingali mapenzi peke, ningesema ni changamoto nijifunze. Ameniacha mpweke na watoto ni watunze, eh. Ila siwezi mlaumu, wenda yuko sawa, kipato changu kigumu na kahawa, eh. Ila mwambieni alioninyima mimi ndo kampa yeye, kupata foreni na subiri yangu mimi atachelewa, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Sina furaha na igiza, ili mradi watoto wasijisi vibaya.
ya connectinga eh uno na kunze si register wabanya buli bubadi go butakuta o missings oli mwechiri umoja sukari alali yonku bisa walai yego wange omugwe mpita bumari alali newe wataba futari
what you mind what you mind calling your phone at any time what you mind حبيبي مفيش حاجة نقولها وصلين لدرجة حب محدش في الدنيا وصلها أنا ليك وعمري ما كون يا حبيبي غير ليك روحي شغلها دي الثانية وانت بعيد ازاي قلبي هيستحملها
And that's our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's Wamba's point of view with Dr. James Jordan, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jordan.
Good evening, Africa. As the year 2019 draws to a close, Africa is confronted with a number of challenges that should be tackled in the new year. These challenges relate to relationship with major powers, all permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. The first relates to the United States. Last week, it was announced that the United States Defense Department is drawing up plans to redeploy all U.S. forces presently on the African continent, and they will be redeployed outside of the African continent. In a sense, this is not surprising for three reasons. One, the Trump administration has not given a high priority to its relationship with the African continent. Number two, congressional opinion has been highly skeptical of U.S. military deployment on the African continent. And number three, the African states themselves have been skeptical about U.S. military involvement on the continent. It should be recalled that the time when it was planned to form the U.S. African Command, Africa strongly opposed deployment of the headquarters of African Command on the continent. They were so worried that former President Bush had to go to Accra, Ghana, to deliver a solemn commitment that the United States would not deploy its headquarters on the African continent. So when the African Command was formed, the headquarters was not on the continent, even though one African state was ready to deploy, to accept the African Command. The question that needs to be clarified next year is what will be the extent of the U.S. redeployment. Will it involve the U.S. withdrawal from the base in Djibouti or its involvement in Somalia? And what about United States involvement with military concerns in places like Libya? These are issues that should be clarified in the new year. The next uncertainty is that relating to France. With great fanfare in La Côte d'Ivoire, President Ouattara announced that 8 Francophone African countries are leaving the CFA and that they will no longer be asked to put half of their foreign exchange in French bank with the concomitant responsibility of France backing their currency, which is tied to the euro. Of course, the CFA has been in Francophone countries since 1945. The new currency that these 8 countries will use is called ECHO, E-C-O. And when some were saying this was a radical move, assurances were made in France that no, it's nothing radical, that even though they are no longer depositing half of their foreign exchange in the French banks, that France will still back the ECHO. But what about the remaining 6 African countries that are still tied to the CFA? These are issues which will require some clarification in the new year. And the third uncertainties are stories which are now just coming out stating that China is getting worried about its investment on the African continent, particularly infrastructure investment, which is so vital to Africa. In Kenya, it was reported that China has refused to finance the continuation of the railroad from the Nyavasa to the boundary with Uganda, saying that it would involve what is called debt trap, echoing Western criticism of China policy in Africa. And it is also said that the Kenyans have said they will just refurbish the connection between Nevada and the Ugandan border. There is also a suggestion that China has got worried about its investments in South Africa, that it has poured money into the energy sector, and yet there's still no results, and therefore believe that it could not put any more money in that venture. Then you have the situation in South Sudan. In South Sudan recently, there have been criticism of Chinese mining practices, saying that mine leaks have not been attended to and there have been fires in South Sudan. What is important to clarify is whether these stories are really true, whether they are emanating from China, because the story did give voice of Chinese businessmen. But is this the new policy of China? Although one can say that it's understandable if China begins to have second thoughts, because China has been under heavy Western criticism, and some Africans have joined in this criticism. And if there's no robust defense of China, why should China stick around? And of course, in the end, Africa will suffer, because who else will come to develop the infrastructure in Africa, which is the only means available to Africa to reduce poverty? This needs to be clarified next year in the new year. In all of this, the African Union really has not been showing any leadership on the African continent, not much, in looking ahead for the African continent. And one hope that in the new year, the African Union will, for example, take a look at the issue of security in the fight against the jihadists, which is a very serious matter. So if America is going away, because America has been assisting France, and if France feels that it cannot do it alone, what will be the role of Africa? So these are issues which needs further clarification in the new year. And we hope the African Union will rise to the occasion. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are there on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Nelson Lopez, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, he who does not shave you does not cut you. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.